Paul Sundberg. I'm the Executive Director of the Swine Health Information Center.
Paul, let's begin with some conflicting reports on African swine fever contaminating feed ingredients in China. In the last 24 to 48 hours, I've seen reports first indicating that they have found ASF in feed, and now a report out today saying that's not true. Chinese officials are denying it. So what's your take?
Well, the contacts that I have that have been in China and are here, the veterinarians that practice, as well as contacts over there, I think you could call them skeptical. The initial report was met with, if they're saying this for a publicly traded company, then you can have pretty high confidence in it. And now that they're retracting it, they're questioning how they could have started that, going down that path, and then tried to retract it. So I think really, truly, Mark, the jury is still out. To be fair, the jury is still out on that. But I'm the consensus from the people that I've talked to is they're rather skeptical about the retraction.
There's been so much research done on viruses contaminating feed. And so the idea that African swine fever could be one of those contaminants, when you look at some of the other viruses, Paul, that have been tested, I mean, the idea that ASF could be in feed, was that surprising? Whether it's true right now or not, did you expect this to eventually come to be?
Oh, absolutely. The research that the center has funded from a couple of years ago showed that a variety of different viruses, including ASF, Seneca Valley virus, which is a surrogate for FMD, including pseudorabies, can all survive in different feed components over a period of time. Also, our experience with PED in the U.S. when that outbreak happened certainly suggests the circumstantial evidence is overwhelming that feed played a role in distributing PED around the country. We don't know how it got into the country, but we're suspicious that it may even have entered the country through feed components because that research supports that contingent, and at least. So it's not surprising that they find it in feed in China, and we're continuing over here to fund research to help figure out how we can best address that potential risk if that window's open, because the whole idea is to keep that virus out of the U.S.
When you think about how ASF has circulated across such a broad geography of China, what do you attribute the spread to? A combination of factors? Would it be transportation of livestock? Do you think that, whether China has confirmed it or not, that feed could be another culprit? What are you attributing the spread to, Paul?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. That's a very good point, that you've got to keep things in perspective as well. There are a variety of different ways that this virus can be spread across the country. People can move it, just physically move it, through waste, feed waste, plate waste that includes meat that comes from pigs that have been contaminated, transmission of the transport system in China, where they're moving pigs from one place to another, and the lack of good biosecurity on all types of farms in China. There's a variety of different ways that it can move. And the announcements and our research both support as well a role for feed, but you need to keep that in perspective of the potential for that versus the others, which are probably much more likely.
I do want to ask you about another virus here, but before that, anything else related to ASF that you want to make sure we talk about?
Well, I think one of the most important things that we need to talk about is what producers can do about ASF right now. We know it's in China. We know that it's circulating in China and Russia and in Eastern Europe. So there's increased pressure on the U.S. for that virus entering into the country. And we're doing everything we can do with USDA to help harden our borders against the virus. The thing that producers can do right now, though, with their veterinarians, is every time that they have an animal health event on the farm, they have an increased morbidity, they have an increased mortality. Something happens that is out of the ordinary for their farm, even though it looks like something they've had before and they can pass it off as this is another incidence of high path PRRS or of salmonella or something that we've dealt with before. get a professional diagnosis. Don't assume that you know what's going on. Make sure that you get a professional diagnosis, because finding that first infection is so important to being able to control it if it ever gets into the country. So that's one of the most important things that we can do every day on the farm right now.
Yeah, I initially reached out to you this week about Seneca virus A and that virus contaminating feed, and that began a discussion about how that news has been out there for a while, but it probably doesn't hurt to maybe refresh the industry on that fact, but then also to talk about some research that's being done. There's a project at South Dakota State that you have some information on today, so I'll let you direct, Paul, where you want to go on Seneca virus.
Sure. Seneca Valley virus is an issue for us in the pork industry because it looks like foot and mouth disease. It causes blisters that you cannot distinguish foot and mouth disease from. So although it's a production disease and it's not a foreign animal disease, because it can cause that confusion, it could be a market issue for us in affecting ability to move pigs, even affecting packing plants. So Seneca Valley is an important one. It's also used as for our research as a surrogate for foot and mouth disease because it is in the same family. We use it as a surrogate where we can't use foot and mouth, but we can use Seneca Valley in our laboratories to do some testing. One of the things that we're doing in this feed issue is working on developing a solid system for ways to mitigate that risk. And there are multiples of those. We're working on research using Seneca Valley, for example, as a surrogate for FMD and also for ASS to test feed mitigant products that may be added to the feed that would take down contamination if that virus is there. Another very important project that we're working on with South Dakota State University is the idea of holding time. On October 8th, the industry, American Association of Swine Veterinarians, the National Pork Board, National Pork Producers Council, and the Swine Health Information Center released results of their research that shows that if feed products are produced under conditions that prevent them from contamination after manufacture, any contamination that could be there in amino acids, in vitamins, in minerals, those types of products, the virus, possible virus contamination in those products degrades 99.99% within 78 days after that manufacture. So that's the 78 days after manufacture of a born-on date. And that's an important thing to help mitigate risk. One of the things that we're doing with South Dakota State, though, is putting more data behind that 78-day rule and looking at the viral degradation in a very sensitive assay that looks at it well over time so we can get good information about the way the viruses would degrade in feed products at different temperatures. We're looking at degradation or inactivation of a virus using Seneca Valley at refrigerator temperatures, at moderate temperatures around 60 degrees, and then at higher temperatures around 80 degrees. So we know that time and temperature make a difference. We expect that research is going to be done about the middle of December. So we've got maybe another month to go before we have very solid science that will help us revise the 78-day holding time communication that we've had. And we're looking forward to providing producers and their veterinarians with that kind of information to help prevent viruses from getting into the country.
This is really an encouragement to me, Paul, the fact that you're looking at all these different avenues to protect the U.S. swine herd, whether it's just the holding time itself, the mitigants that you could add to feed to help sequester the virus threat, multiple approaches to what is a very real threat. I think that's encouraging.
Well, the whole effort here is to find alternatives for producers to use in their production and make them cost effective. So it might be cost effective to use a mitigant to put into the feed. It might be cost effective to hold, simply hold the feed components for a time. Another thing that we're doing with the University of Minnesota is looking at production and pathway controls, using, for example, blockchain to track feed products coming into the country. If they start out biosecure and start out non-contaminated, that we know that we can look through the process and maintain that control so they're not contaminated when they get to the farm. So the effort really here is to look for cost-effective ways that producers can implement good practices that will help protect our herd.
All right, I've got to veer off course for a second, and I know you're traveling today, so hopefully it doesn't take too long, but I've heard people try to define blockchain to me, Paul, and I still don't understand it. What's your definition of blockchain?
Yeah, blockchain is a system of record keeping, and what it amounts to is really its traceability. From the point of manufacture, looking all the way through if the record keeping and traceability of wherever that product goes until it gets used wherever it's supposed to be. And the blockchain concept is really one of keeping those records in various places in order to prevent people from manipulating them. Rather than trusting somebody with a single record that can be kept, keep those records in different areas. And that way it's less likely that they could be manipulated. You can have more confidence in that traceability system. The University of Minnesota is doing this project for us, and by the first of the year, I think maybe mid to early even December, we'll have a report from those folks that are blockchain experts that will help interpret just exactly what that means for the pork industry in feed control and how that might be implemented.
Based on that definition, I have to ask, what's the downside to blockchain? Is it the paperwork? Is there cost associated to it? I mean, it doesn't sound like there'd be a negative.
Well, there is going to be cost. Anytime that you put a system into place, there's going to be some cost. I do not know what the cost is, and I'm looking forward to the University of Minnesota helping us with that. The other issue with blockchain, and it's a traceability one, is also accountability. That there may be some resistance to a program like that because you can trace back and account blame or account credit to an initiator of the blockchain process in a certain product. So there's some hesitancy about applying complete traceability. But I think that's a way that the world's going to go in the future, and we've got to be prepared for that as a pork industry.
We've covered a lot today. Anything else you want to make sure we discuss?
You know, I think that the final issue is to make sure that we are doing the best that we can do to get a good diagnosis. I'm going to say that again because I truly believe that that is the way that we're going to be able to find the first incursion of ASF or any foreign animal disease if it gets here or when it gets here. And so I think that's really the very most important thing that we can do. Have confidence in our USDA and our national biosecurity systems, and we're working with them in partnership to ensure that we're doing everything we can do to prevent it. And that should be job number one. But in the case that it gets in, we have to find it right away in order to limit the damage, and that should be job number two.